Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Way back in 2005, two brothers set off on a road trip that would save the world and change television.
David and Sean Cassidy.
No, not the Cassidys.
That's a waste.
No, it's Sam and Dean Winchester.
All right.
For 15 seasons and 327 episodes, Supernatural took audiences on a wild ride of family, fate, and faith with a rocking soundtrack and a seriously cool car.
But that was then, Bobbo, and this is now. And yes, the show has quote-unquote ended, but we're not quite done with the journey.
No, we're not.
And that's why we're watching it all over again, or for Rob and me, for the first time.
That's right.
Diving deep into every episode of Supernatural with the fine folks who made it. And we're taking you along for the ride.
Whether you like it or not. I'm Rob Benedict. I played Chuck Shirley, a.k.a. God.
Spoiler.
Yeah, it is a bit of a spoiler, but hey, spoilers are fair game here.
Ah, fine. And I'm Richard Spate Jr., and I played the Trickster, also known as the Archangel Gabriel. And I did a little bit of Loki work in there.
Okay, you know what? We're running out of time.
Okay, well, we'll be talking about the entire series, so whatever we say, accept it. You've been warned.
So buckle up and settle in.
Because this, my friend, is Supernatural, then and now.
Hey, everybody, this is Rob Benedict.
And I'm Richard Spate Jr.
And we're here to talk about Supernatural Season 2, Episode 18, Hollywood Babylon.
Okay, see, right there, I had this title wrong. I thought it was pronounced Hollywood Baby Lawn.
Baby Lawn, yeah.
And it was a sequel to Hollywood Grown Up Lawn.
Oh, right. You know, nobody makes that mistake.
Wait a minute. It's spelled B-A-B-Y L-O-N.
Uh-huh.
Baby Lawn.
Baby Lawn. This is my baby lawn. My big lawn is around back.
Hollywood Baby Lawn.
Baby Lawn. All right, let's get into it. There's a lot of fun little nuggets to break down in this episode.
Yep.
All right. So to summarize, after the death of Madison.
Who's Madison?
I don't know.
Madison, come on. You gotta remind everybody.
Okay,
she's from home.
So Madison, who everyone knows, was the werewolf that had sex with Jared.
I'm not sure that's how we should characterize the character, but maybe she had the internal struggle of being a wolf who couldn't get out of being a wolf, you know?
Tomato, tomato. And then he shot her to end the episode. So after that dark moment, we're going to lighten it up and go to Hollywood. So
Tinseltown.
Yeah, that's right. Dean convinces Sam to head down to L.A. to take a break from hunting.
The Dream Factory.
That's right. Sam wants to keep himself busy and look for a case. The boys discover that there is a movie shooting where some strange things have occurred.
Is there a movie shooting in town where strange things aren't occurring? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
guys,
well,
am I right?
Hey, huh? A stagehand has been mysteriously killed and the lead actress reported seeing a ghost by the body. Dean gets jazzed when he learns that the movie stars one of his favorite actresses, Tara Benchley.
Ooh.
The boys start investigating and learn that the stagehand's death was faked. It was a publicity stunt staged by the slimy studio executive, Brad Redding.
I never trusted Brad.
No, nobody trusts anybody named Brad, including Brad Creaser, our camera operator. However, he soon dies after seeing a ghost on set.
Oh, no.
So Dean goes undercover as a PA, which, Rich, that's actually PA stands for production assistant.
Oh, didn't understand that.
And he's a natural at the job, and he loves the craft goodies.
Yeah, he likes the free food.
Yeah. The brothers learn of a legend about a screen actress of the 1930s who killed herself on the stage after being dumped by a studio executive. She's buried at the Hollywood Forever Cemetery, which I go to every summer to watch movies. They have movie screenings at the Hollywood Forever Cemetery. where the boys salt and burn her bones. That doesn't happen at the movie screenings. Soon after, one of the executive producers is wandering around the set and encounters a different ghost. He gets sucked into a giant wind fan, I hate it when that happens, and gets turned into a bloody mess.
Didn't you think that guy was the DP?
I
thought he was the director of photography. I didn't understand that he was a producer.
No, I think I knew. I didn't think he was the DP.
Huh.
This leads Sam and Dean to discover that the incantations in the script are real summoning rituals. They approach the writer, good old Martin Flagg, two G's, who admits they are real, but says they're not his work.
Not his work?
No, the original writer, someone named Walter Dixon, it was the one who put them in. So Dixon, who was just a guy that they saw mumbling around set, feels that he's been cheated and that his original script has been watered down. He lures Flagg to the set, intent on killing him. This reminds me of backstage at Kings of Con. That's what you did to me when we were writing.
Yes, correct. Exactly.
Sam and Dean arrive in time to save Flagg. They confront Dixon, who admits that he is using the summoning spells to get spirits and ghosts to kill the people that he feels have ruined his script and his movie. Flagg destroys the talisman he's been using to control the spirits. He doesn't want anyone to have it. However, once free, the spirits turn on Dixon and kill him.
So wait a minute. He lied to Martin Flagg, but Martin Flagg was also watering down the script and claiming that work was his when it wasn't his, and that was making Walter Dixon all mad. So essentially, this whole thing is a false flag operation. Is that fair to say?
I feel like this is leading to something. It leads to, at the end, the flag gets teared down. They tear down the flag.
The flag gets teared down?
Yeah, they tear down the flag.
What's your first language? Because it's not English.
They set him up halfway, and they say he's at half-mast. No? All right. Flagg incorporates details of the encounter into the script, and the movie continues production. Sam looks for Dean. He finds him leaving the trailer of Tara Benchley. Obvious that they just hooked up.
Wait, they just hooked up? I didn't pick up on that at all.
Come on. Literally, the trailer's shaking.
Well, I assume, dude, if you were coming down those stairs, those flimsy stairs, I assume that meant he was coming out of the trailer and they just met.
She's in a robe.
She's got, you know how you don't put your costume on, you're getting touch-ups? You get makeup all over your... What did you think was going on, Rob?
I know what was going on. Same thing that happened with the werewolf back in wherever they were.
You mean Madison? She's a person, Rob. Madison.
Anyway, in the last shot, Sam and Dean walk into the fake sunset together as the Vancouver rains all around them.
I like to make a Vancouver joke. They're like, wow, this is like Vancouver.
They did?
Yeah. It was raining. It's like, look at this weather. It's like Vancouver down here.
He said that?
Yeah, at some point.
Did he?
Yeah, there was some joke.
I missed that. I thought it was hilarious because they're supposed to be in Los Angeles where it never rains. And it was raining the entire time.
I know.
The streets were soaking wet. And that last shot of them walking into the fake sunset, it was downpouring.
It's great. It's really, that last shot is awesome. The whole episode's super fun.
Fantastic.
Well, let's talk about it. Let's review it. Let's get into the R&RR, which is the Robin Rich review.
That's right. I thought it was awesome. It's a classic episode. You've got a classic funny Dean. You've got classic Phil Segrisha directing, Ben Edlund writing, and it's really one of the first times I feel like, I mean, to me, this is almost a setup of, some of the episodes to come where it really like winks at the audience
right. And
pulls back the curtain a little bit. You've got cameos from crew members that we know. Do you see Robin riding the bike?
No.
Yeah, Robin's riding the little like motor scooter thing. That
Robin props?
Little, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
They're walking to a trailer and Robin comes by in like a scooter, like a little motorcycle.
Oh, that's awesome.
And Jose.
You saw Jose?
Yeah.
Where was Jose?
That's his name, right? Jose?
Well, if you're referring to Jose, then yes, it's his name. I don't know if you're referring to somebody else and getting their name wrong. Jose Camera? Focus?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, he's all over it. Is there a couple shots he's in?
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Okay, there's a big old shot of Johnny Mack in there.
Yep. See Johnny Mack? Yep.
Johnny Mack, the AD.
So, yeah, a lot of our friends, the crew, making cameos. The fact that the director is named McGee.
There's a great cameo that you wouldn't pick up on. But when they call everybody together in a group to talk about, hey, this guy died, but what he really wants us to do is finish the film. The McGee character sort of rallies the troops.
Yeah, yeah,
after
yeah.
the executive producer yeah. dies. And there's a shot of Jared and Jensen standing there. Right behind them is a guy wearing wraparound sunglasses. And that guy's name is Matteo DiOrio. And Matteo DiOrio is the Steadicam operator on Kung Fu. So I'm sitting there watching, and I'm like,
he must have just been working on the crew.
He was. I texted him. I'm like, wait a minute, am I seeing you in this episode of Supernatural? And he's, yeah. I was a camera trainee, so I was on set at that point. And he goes, I also was the guy doing the slate in the movie they were making. And he was just on crew for that episode and got and I go, dude, you accidentally stood in the best spot to be in the show behind Jared and Jensen. And he was like, that was no accident. I absolutely knew where they were and stood right behind them. So there's a really great shot. I'll send it to you guys right now because you got to see how like featured he is. But there he is, Matteo Diorio, B camera operator, steady camera operator of Kung Fu, another CW show. Years before he was doing that, he was. Well, a trainee on Supernatural and making a cameo in the show.
Wow, that's amazing.
Isn't that trippy?
Surprised he didn't write back, who dis?
New phone, who dis?
So, yeah, no, it was super fun. And just like, I just loved all the little Hollywood nuggets. And, you know, the Dean, of course, Dean would be the kind of person that loved the free food. And I love the scene where Sam's talking to him and he's doing the AD bit where there's someone's talking in their ear. Right. So they're like,
didn't Phil tell us that Jensen made that up?
Did he?
Oh, that's I recall Ben Edlin writing
to me. What else did I love? There's
Gary Cole. We haven't even talked about Gary Cole being in there. He's so great. What a legend.
Almost a cameo.
I know. Didn't you think he was going to be in it more?
Well, yeah. Can't believe he was the first one killed.
I think if you pony up for Gary Cole, you use Gary Cole, you know?
Yeah.
But I guess.
But he probably was in town doing something else or something, and they called
him. Well, he's buddies with Bob Singer, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm sure Bob pulled the old Bob Singer favor.
Right.
Awesome having him in there, though. I mean, he elevated the whole thing.
Yeah. There was reference. Who was it who said there? Oh, the guy that played the guy who died, but it was fake, and he was just an actor.
Right.
Go to his house. He mentions like doing a play down at Costa Mesa. And that's when I first moved to LA, I did like three plays down in Costa Mesa. There's a theater down there called South Coast Repertory Theater. And that's what he was referring to.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome.
Yeah. What else did you think, Richard?
I thought it was the tongue-in-cheekness of it all and it sort of poke at Hollywood was great. I thought it was really, really good. I even love how it leaned into the comedy the whole time. Like the teaser, you know, she screams because she sees a monster, but then you cut to the director going, now that's what I'm talking about. And then it goes to the Supernatural logo.
That's great.
I thought that was super clever.
Yeah. And the preview was the trailer that they made was funny where it's like, you know, from the director of, Charlie's Angels, Full Throttle.
Right. That was super fun. The trailer was super funny. I also wondered what was like, all the years I've been in Supernatural, I've always heard them make the joke, another costly sound delay. And they say that in this episode. And I'm trying to figure out, did they say that in this episode because they always said that in the cast and crew of Supernatural?
Right.
Or is that where the cast and crew got that phrase?
Right.
And I tend to think they added it because it was already a phrase on set.
Right.
I just get the feeling they had a lot of fun putting their own inside jokes in this episode because it was their own crew playing the crew and it was a meta episode before anybody knew the phrase meta episode. I'm trying to think if I had anything that I didn't like about it. I thought it was super clever. You know, Edlin just writes such smart, funny, obtuse episodes, and Phil is a master
craftsman. I mean, he's a really fun director, and he looks at the, you know what I mean, fun, creative ways to shoot things. And
he gets every detail, dude. He just gets every detail. There's no two ways about it.
And it was, you know, I bet it wasn't easy to shoot because, you know, you're on a set, shooting a set, and you're trying to make it look like a real Hollywood lot, which they don't really have up in Vancouver. So
right, and if you're going to get crafty and want a sandwich, are you going to the fake crafty to get a sandwich?
Exactly.
Or you go to the real crafty to get a sandwich? It gets really confusing. I do wonder where they shot that, to your point. Like, I don't recall a lot of backlots up in Vancouver.
No.
Obviously, there are, but I wonder where they shot that.
The other thing is, on that last shot, I'd be curious to ask somebody, there's the fake backdrop that then goes away, right?
Right.
And then they're just walking out.
Right.
And it looks like the backdrop, which is supposed to be Los Angeles, that looks fake. Was that supposed to be fake? Was that fake?
I know
what
you mean. I don't know. I bet it wasn't supposed to look fake, but was fake.
Uh-huh.
That's my bet.
Now that we look back and we realize, oh, that's fake too.
It's really a great last shot, though.
It's a great last shot. It's a great idea.
It's a great episode. It's one of those ones where I wish we had Phil and Ben with us right now.
I know.
To pick it apart with us. But now, to give it a review.
I was thinking about this. I think Look, I think it's up there with one of the classic all-time Supernatural episodes. I've heard it talked about. I'd never seen it.
Yes.
So I think it's a classic, and it has a twist. The fact that it's one of the first episodes that Supernatural kind of was looking at the audience and winking. Right. You know, there are episodes to come, like your episode Changing Channels or the convention episode that I did, of course, the French Mistake. Which kind of build on this idea that we're able to do that in this world. But this was the first, right? So there's something about the beard that has to go, it's a trendsetter. So I'm going to go, it's a perfect full beard with like a little ponytail under the chin. Just as sort of a, like, has a little pizzazz in a way that others haven't.
Ponytail under the chin. I'm just trying to think. I'm drawing it like, do you have an image of somebody?
Do you watch Cobra Kai? Do you watch Cobra Kai?
I have not seen Cobra Kai, no.
Wow. Your son goes as a character from Cobra Kai and you have no idea.
Well, I saw the original.
Wow. Well, there was no original. Cobra Kai is
I saw Karate Kid, my point.
Oh, Karate Kid, yeah. Well, there's an actor on it that has a beard, and under the beard is like if part of the beard gets braided. And a little, like, chin tail as opposed to a ponytail. A chin just comes down off the chin.
Okay, all right. So that's the tail and, up the chin. And you don't know the actor's name or the...
Yeah, I do. I could find out.
Let's see.
It's Paul Walter Hauser. He is in Cobra Kai.
Paul Walter Hauser. He's amazing. He's in Cobra Kai?
He's in Cobra Kai.
God, he's so good in Blackbird. Okay, so you're giving him a Paul Walter Hauser from Cobra Kai.
Well, from Cobra Kai, yeah. Where he's got a little... Yeah. There's a section of our audience that's going to know exactly what I'm talking about.
Right. And that's a good one. I'm going to go with a James Harden. I'm going with sort of the strong beard. And what I like about the James Harden is it comes out of nowhere because he's got short hair, closely cropped NBA star, athlete, short hair look with this just massive beard that comes out of nowhere. Like the episode comes out of nowhere. It just shocks you with his comedy and his uniqueness and its standalone ability. And it's sort of a fresh voice in the midst of a really dark arc that goes from Madison having to get offed by her lover, Sam, to, and now we're in Hollywood and things are crazy. And so I'm going to go with James Harden, which is damn close to a Stapleton. You know, it's probably as close to a Stapleton as you can get without being a Stapleton. I'm just giving you I'm leaning with Rob on the idea that it's a great review with flair. See what I'm saying?
Yeah, like, the difference between James Harden and Chris Stapleton. James Harden, if you're not a basketball fan, he's one of the premier basketball players in the NBA. He's got style. If you look at that guy off court, that guy's got a lot of style.
100%. Like this episode.
Yeah, and Chris Stapleton is, you know, we love him, but he's just a good old boy who grew his, you know, beard out. But
we got a long hair and a beard. He didn't give two hoots about what you think about it. So, yes, let's go with, I'm going Harden and you're going...
Paul Walter Hauser. He played the character Raymond on Cobra Kai, and his beard in Cobra Kai is quite something.
This is an interesting piece of trivia that people will maybe find fascinating if they're still with us. Our review... was longer than the episode itself. So the first time ever, we've outpaced the actual show with this.
Cut to buildings, buildings falling and rising again.
Yes. Prolonged review. Anyway, there you go. There's a review. The Rob and Rich review.
All right. Our guest today is special makeup effects and prosthetic artist Toby Lindela. Toby was part of Supernatural's makeup department from 2005 to 2016.
The salad days, they call those years.
That's right.
I guess they would call them the salad years. Whatever.
The salad years. So it's a lot of days. Yeah. Other TV credits include Peacemaker, See the Stand, or as Rich likes to say, See the Stand.
You should see the sit. See the genuflect. They're all impressive.
Supergirl, X-Files, Lucifer, and DC's Legends of Tomorrow. Film credits include Star Trek Beyond, insert Rich joke.
Beyond what, Rob?
Warcraft, The Grudge, and Antlers. Please welcome Toby Lindela.
I feel like your name is The Grudge.
Thanks, Toby. It's so nice to have you on. It's Toby Lindela, who did the prosthetic makeup. And anytime you saw a face that was messed up.
A mangled limb.
Yeah. That's Toby's fault.
Toby's your guy.
It's not all my fault. I'm a member of a really great team of people that pulled it together, you know?
Well, it does take, I mean, we're going to kind of dive into that. But, well, let's start at the beginning. Robbie, let's start at the beginning.
Yeah. How did you get your start? What was did you have a dream as a kid? Was this always what you wanted to do?
It's always what I did. when I was quite young, I was actually really affected by horror movies when I was young. I think I'm like particularly sensitive, and I've since kind of like calloused that all over with watching so many like graphic things, you know. But yeah, I was really stirred. So I had to figure out how it was done, and you know, I just got really drawn to it and pushing into the fear. But I started like building stuff and mixing blood. And my first, you know, just playing around, I was always in trouble. They thought I was going to be a serial killer or a Satanist or something. But and now my parents gladly wear these shirts. We kill people for a living. Literally shrinking effects, right?
You just said something that it was fascinating, and I'm going to mangle it a little bit, but you said you leaned into the fear or something along those lines, which is really interesting. So I have to ask, so you were affected by horror movies, and it doesn't sound like it was all positive, though. It sounds like you had some adverse effects from watching graphic stuff. Is that fair to say?
I guess so. I mean, it could be some kind of form of a synesthesia or something like that. You know, like, because I also, I definitely was uncomfortable, you know, but it's like that roller coaster ride feeling, right? Like,
right.
You know, I'm going to die. Oh, my life. Right.
And right.
So I was in that, I had a real like heightened sense of fear, but that made it kind of more attractive because I never got injured from it. And then I became like just enamored with the idea of like, how do you scare people like that? That's powerful, you know, just to have a chance to experience those bodily and mental reactions.
Absolutely. Yeah. So you would have just start like some of your origin story movies. Like what movies are we talking about that inspired you?
I mean, I remember just getting really enamored with Abbott and Costello's Meet the Frankenstein and Werewolf and stuff. Like,
sure.
You know, yeah, like those were awesome. There's in the early, the early Hammer films and the those sent me. I literally believed my mother was a vampire for the first 15 to 48 years of my life.
Wow, that's a big run there. That's a big gap.
Yeah, I'm still unsure. Jury's out. But she's got full dentures, so you can never know, really.
Yeah. good point. Bad pun. Good
yeah,
point.
I remember my parents had, when I was a kid, my parents had had a book that like covered all the horror films like from the early days to now, which was mid-70s. And it was all the creatures. And I remember being particularly freaked out by Nosferatu.
Oh, right on. Yeah.
That freaked me out. Just the pictures of Nosferatu, which is probably the 20s or 30s. You know what I'm talking about, Rich?
Yeah, of course. Like,
just Kinski. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That was beautiful. Yeah. I got really into, by leading into the horror, I mean, I watched a lot of Herschel Gordon Lewis films and that. When VHS just kind of came out when I was around 12, 13. Mm-hmm. And I was in Sault Ste. Marie. We just like rent the craziest, nastiest backyard slash films. And it's all like actual meat and mannequins, you know?
Right.
But just like put you right into these Herschel Gordon Lewis films. And yeah.
So name some titles, because I'm not a horror aficionado. Oh, so
Wizard of Gore, Monster of Go-Go, you know, Herschel Gordon Lewis. They've remade Wizard of Gore. It's kind of a backyard slasher classic.
Right.
But there's something about VHS that almost makes it scarier.
True, man. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So it's really interesting because my experience with horror films was the opposite. I was scared by them and not in a charming way. Like I just didn't like scary stuff. I would go to a theme park or the traveling carnival that would come through town. Mm. And as soon as you get over to like the weird area, I mean, I would literally freeze my tracks and I have to be escorted the other direction. It would really freak me out. The cheesy painting on the front of the place.
Right.
Yeah. Remember, I think the movie It's Alive was out like around then in the 70s. And there was you remember that? The It's Alive. And it was the baby carriage. Oh, with awesome. The lobster claw hanging out the side of it. Just scared the awesome. Living crap out of me. And it was just a still image. It was a billboard. Or actually, it was the trailer. And the trailer was, I don't even remember this, it was like Rockabye Baby and a camera circling a carriage. And you hear the baby crying. And it's this beautiful 1950s candy carriage. Yeah. And you get around to the other side and that baby's arm drops out and it's got a lobster claw on it. And it just freaked me out. And so I did not lean into my fear. I leaned away from my fear. I sprinted the other direction. So you leaning into your fear to me means that even though you had a quote unquote negative reaction, like you say, it had an endorphinal effect on you in a positive light, right? Like it triggered something, a creativity. Absolutely. Or something.
Yeah. Yeah. I was fascinated by the power of it, you know?
Like if this can do this to me, can I do this to other people type thing?
Exactly. Exactly. And can I rule these monsters that I'm afraid of, you know, like,
right.
I'd be the Uber monster.
That's super interesting.
But it's neat. It's such it's a really wonderful field because it, it's super varied too. You know, that my first paying work was, I was 11. Oddly, I got there were some family friends that had a little theater thing happening in Sault Ste. Marie. And I was playing around with mixing blood, and they couldn't figure out how to get a blood. It was for Agnes of God. And they were doing a stage performance of that. So she's going to be covered in blood at the end. And I was 11, and they said, hey, yeah, so we hear you're in it. Yeah. Can you think of anything? So I mixed up a bunch of blood with a soap base, right? Instead of like a syrup or anything base. And it washed right out so they could just keep that same costume. It started out nice bright white and then continue on, right?
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Genius.
Yeah, simple, but... Yeah, but I love doing stuff like that, you know?
That's awesome.
Did your passion and you know, hobby ever turn into formal training, or are you self-taught?
No, I did do some training, but I never really, a lot of guys seem to like start to think of it as like a career sort of path from the beginning. It was just a hobby for me, man. Like I just loved doing it. It was fun, but I always made things. It's like music, art, anything like inventing stuff. But I wound up, when I was 17, I wanted to go to school, but we didn't have like money or resources. And I didn't want to spend 4 years in school and come out on the bottom rung of something that I didn't really know what I wanted to do or didn't know if I like it or not. Right.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. So I thought, well, there's this makeup thing that I've been playing with. I mean, I'll check it out. I caught an ad. I was lucky. I studied with, it was just like 6 weeks, but I studied with, Todd McIntosh. He's a makeup artist. He did Buffy and American and Canadian sort of combo. And he's just like obsessed. He's a wonderful artist, but he's like brilliant, but he's obsessed. He's wonderfully obsessed.
Yeah. So. I might have worked with that guy. I played a vampire on Buffy way back in the day. And
nice.
I was one of my favorite experiences, like being able to be, you know, made up. Because and, you know, he like went to work on my face with his, if it was him with the spray gun, you know, and it's like 4 hours in the chair. But yeah, that's cool. So that's awesome. So you got to work with him, and that really taught you a lot, I'm sure.
He's a wonderful artist. And there's like this whole sort of like school, the whole business, like, it's really come together mostly due to Dick Smith. There's a guy, Dick Smith. I don't know if you're familiar, but Todd trained under him. And I took the Smith course eventually as well. But it's kind of a mail out thing. It's his life experience. He's like got this wonderful inventive mind, and he keeps like meticulous records. So he shared them all. And it was really, really wonderful to check it out and to get challenged to like use that as a reference point to start making some of my own stuff. I remember at one point I was working on a show and I called up Dick but I called him up and said, I gotta make these guys look frozen. And there's stuff I saw in your course, and I played with a bit where the mixtures with, it's like an old effects sort of trick where you do paraffin wax and turpentine, and you gotta warm it and just keep it warm while you're spraying it through a Prevail or a aerosol sort of spray.
Right.
And it's wonderful because you get like these crystalline sort of like form. You get like everything kind of drips down. You get like real icicle look and all that, the way it plays, and you can kind of make it a little bit more translucent and stuff. But I called up, you know, I was a kid. I was working on X-Files. I was like 24, 25, something like that. And I called him up. I called up the shop steward from the union and said, I just need to check before, because the only thing I'm most familiar with to make these frozen look is this turpentine and wax. Is it okay I spray turpentine and wax on people? Said, no! Okay. Just asking.
Jeez, guys.
Good to know. And so, Toby, were you on Supernatural from the beginning?
I actually just came in season 2. I believe Ryan Nicholson did a bunch of stuff for season 1 and Chalier. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I spoke with the guys, but yeah, it just didn't work out getting in on season 1. But I came in on season 2 and worked straight through. It was fine. I mean, I worked with Kim since The X-Files, right? So
yeah.
Such a wonderful director, man.
Well, you know, that's a recurring comment we get is that everybody was like, dude, he was no shrinking violet, but man, he was great, and man, he was supportive, and I loved him.
Yeah, and you knew it. You were dealing with exactly what was in your face, man. And he was strong and powerful, amazing at pulling stuff out. Like, I was listening to some of your earlier casts and stuff. It's nice to hear so many other people reflecting on it as well, man. Yeah, we'd go in for a meeting. I'd just have the script, just get through it and stuff. But things come together fast in TV, right? Like, that's not our thing. We make anything in a week. Sometimes. And sometimes it's just a couple of days. And depending on other variables, the schedules, you can't buy a day anywhere. So we have to get moving on stuff. And right from just getting scripts or pages, he would be like, he just like close his eyes and run through it in his head. And he's just like, no, it'll be on his right arm. It'll be from that direction. You know, like he knew like crazy details, right?
Yeah.
So neat. Yeah, it was already all made in his head.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, very gratifying to work with someone who has a vision like that.
It is. It's a little intimidating, but it really helps.
Especially for you, for what you do.
Yeah, huge.
Well, we're talking about Hollywood, the episode Hollywood Babylon.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons we have you here is you had a lot of work to do in this. There are a lot of dead ghosts to make up. How did it begin? Do you have initial conversations with Bob and Eric, Phil the director, Ben the writer, about what the look of the ghost was going to be?
Absolutely. I can't remember specifically on that one how it came together. I remember doing a digital design for it at one point for one of the characters, for that Billy Beard guy. Mm-hmm. We get the pages, and it went on for so many years that it got nice. It was like kind of like talking shorthand, you know. The feel over time, right? Which it took a little bit for me to get there, cause, you know, they really invented their own. Supernatural had their own mythology, right? There was nods towards reference points in traditional sort of vampires, but like werewolves are invisible. Okay, like, you know, like,
right,
you know, the twisted things. And
yeah, you go back to the Bible.
Yeah.
The supernatural Bible for what you need to
do. Exactly. Yeah. So try to keep it, still reflecting that world. They've got their own mythology. And Eric was amazing with that. Yeah. He knew exactly what was going on. All over it. Yeah. But generally, get pages and then get together and kind of spitball it a little bit and then come back with some designs. Right.
Okay.
You develop that eventually. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, guys, hold on. We're coming right back.
Sense it calling out to you.
New reality seeks you.
Join the journey to save Anomaly.
Place where sound is magic. The only way to enter the world is by looking inward.
Along the way, you'll learn potions, chants, and enchantments that will help you both in that reality and yours.
So, answer the call and let your campaign begin.
Featuring the voices of Ruth Connell from Supernatural and Dead Boy Detectives.
There are ordeals ahead, yet with guidance, you will face them head on without fear.
Todd Stashwick from Star Trek Picard and 12 Monkeys.
When the time arrives, wherever your journey takes you, be there with no attachments.
And R&B singer N.C. Gray.
There are worlds, realms, dimensions, and realities beyond yours.
Anomaly is a role-playing meditation podcast that takes you into a world of magic and fantasy. You'll be invited to imagine yourself in scenarios such as learning to cast a tranquility spell or exploring a land vanquished by a dragon, but all connected by a shared mythology. The goal of guided fantasy role-playing meditations are to help you cultivate a sense of wonder, curiosity, balance, and joy in your inner world. Role-playing meditation is a form of escapism and relaxation, as well as a creative outlet for the imagination. The first campaign is an introduction to the world of Anomaly, its lands, magic, and secrets. In the 8 chapters, you'll stretch your imagination, learn to center yourself, offer forgiveness, find confidence, relieve stress, and stop racing thoughts. Your true self will emerge, allowing you to manage your goals and dreams without confusion, distrust, or self-doubt. You can find it on Spotify, Apple, and wherever you listen to podcasts. Or visit seekanomaly.com to learn more. Anomaly spelled with an I-E, not a Y.
Seek Anomaly. Hear its magic.
Thanks for listening, everybody. And now back to the episode.
It was pretty gruesome. Hollywood Babylon was pretty, In terms of our run here with Supernatural so far, because Rob and I have started season one and gone all the way through, unless I'm missing something, Rob, and you can tell me, it's like kind of the most gruesome of the prosthetic events.
Oh,
like,
you're just getting moving, man. Yeah, yeah, just gotta keep on coming.
Yeah, because that dude, like, that dude who got the fan in the face, or, you know, the Billy Beard, like, that was intense. Mm-hmm. That looked, and that had to be substantially time involved to get him done like that.
It was a really nice collaboration with visual effects. You know, Ivan Hayden was coordinating that. And
sure.
Yeah.
Mark was wonderful later on, too. But they all worked together. But yeah, man, what a killer visual effects team. And it was really nice to have so much strength and communication in-house, you know? Yeah, man, because we built the pieces for him. And, you know, it was all foam latex back in the day still then. And ventilated wig and stuff and a fake eye. But we had a big swath. It was just painted out green. Yeah, they brought the background in so that, you're looking through. We made some negative space. That's always the trick in prosthetics. It's like, you know, it's an additive process, right? So
right.
A lot of times with characters and stuff, I get I get lenses done. I just get them to make the eyes a little bit bigger to help refine the features. Because the everything we do is bigger and bigger and bigger to imply depth, right?
Right.
Visual effects, think about it and plan it out enough in advance, man. It was really cool.
And for that guy, like, looked like he had like something happened, something fell on his head or something. Was there a discussion about what his backstory was?
Yeah, he was. I think he was hacked apart by the fan. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Okay. That was
he got chopped up by the.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you said so back in the day you'd do it with foam and latex. Mm-hmm. What would you do that with today if you're doing it?
Almost everything's silicone these days now.
Okay.
But that was still. That was still kind of the early silicone days. There's a couple of different tricks to them over time, like that stuff that wouldn't cure for that puppet. Way back.
Right.
And that was back when we were using still tin cure silicones. Because platinum silicones hadn't really come out to the extent that they have now. It's a wonderful field because outside of just the challenges of everything being different, you're building anything different out of everything you're building from is different every day too, man.
Are you camera specific? Meaning like now with the digital photography, well, probably with film as well, but different cameras handle blacks a different way. Different cameras absorb information in a different ratio. Yeah. Does that affect your choices?
Very much. Yeah. And ideally we get a chance if there's anything that's like really like, you know, specifically needs to be just right, you know, then we get a chance to check it with the director of photography. They call it the LUTs, right? That's where they
right.
set parameters. So yeah, the LUTs can really affect it. It's not the same as like Kodak versus Fuji back in the day, right? But
well, can you do me a favor? Explain to the uninformed, because we you know, we don't want to say industry terms and not walk cool. people through it. From your perspective, how does a LUT affect your choices, and how would you explain a LUT to the fan?
Well, the way I understand it, they can set the parameters of their color spectrum, and it's kind of neat because it can kind of also really help us. You know, thankfully, I've worked with some really wonderful, and Serge is amazing. You know, so again, on this show, there was an understanding, but a LUT to me is, you know, some shows they'll push really far into the reds, and all of a sudden I'll have a red tone that just like pops way up, right? It just gets really hot and it looks odd. So you need to be able to adjust to that or have that planned in advance. Or you know, say a lot of shows these days they just crank the contrast, right? There's different ways of reacting to that. I tend to keep my blood a little bit redder than I would to the naked eye, right? Just because it just gets so blackened down. If once you lose all the red, it's a little trick I learned from El Royale.
And you started on film, right? So when things were, you were working on X-Files. So that had to be different. And now this predates my understanding of a LUT, but you wouldn't have been able to see, because you can see the application of the LUT in digital photography. You can go to the DIT tent and look at what's going on, right? But you don't get to see that when you're shooting on film, could you? Wouldn't you only see that in the daily?
No, you couldn't even trust monitors at all.
Right.
Like none of that stuff, back in the day. No, I still tend to stand behind the camera wherever possible.
So that's the only way you could really get a true look at it is looking through the lens, essentially?
Yeah, exactly. And you still can't. Like the film's going to affect it differently than just the eyepiece will.
That's freaking fascinating, man. It's so challenging to keep that dialed in.
Yeah.
Shot in the dark. But again, also like these days, it's funny because I've had shows where it's the LUT can be planned one way and then it can be just totally adjusted and reset and post too, right?
Yeah, well, because it's not baked in. Yeah. Like it's not
wherever they want. Idea. Yeah, it's a rough approximation of what we might be doing.
Right.
So here's a question that's like not, it's supernatural, but it's not Hollywood Babylon. It's the previous episode, which was Heart. And Heart was the introduction of the werewolf in supernatural lore. Pretty big impact because they went on to have, you know, werewolves for the rest of the show, the rest of the run. How did you go about developing that look, the teeth and that whole design?
Our standard, we first came across. But it's funny because I remember when that first came across our plate, I'm thinking American Werewolf, it was an interesting take. It was not too far dispatched from our vampire look, but still had its own, specific look and strength and mythology and allowed for a whole other level of performance than everybody going full wolfy.
Right, right,
right.
But we started out with, we did like a bunch of digital designs again. It was all Photoshop. Right.
So
get a lot of photos and then do photo manipulation. Now we're all 3D, which is
crazy.
Crazy. Yeah.
That's one thing the pandemic gave me, thankfully. It put me, good and bad. It put me in front of the computer long enough that I could, for a focused couple of months that I could finally get my chops up on ZBrush. So I'm doing more stuff.
Oh, cool.
That's awesome. Did you have, and this might be impossible to ask, it might be asking like, who's your favorite child? But do you have a favorite monster from the supernatural universe that you created?
Yeah, they're all so different. It's tricky, hey?
Right. Exactly.
Doc Benton was really fun. Dr. Benton. There's a bunch of different stuff. Like there's a bunch of live gags that we did too, like bloody gory gags. We really, we really got pretty red in that show, actually. Yeah.
Awesome.
Pushing the limits, man.
That's awesome. I can imagine that when you are doing something that freeform, that you are in love with all of your babies. You know what I mean? Because you're really coming up from scratch in the same way that an actor relates to a character, you relate to a character. It's coming from your mind to fruition on the in development and then on the screen. And it must be interesting too, to see when your creations are actor specific, meaning like it's going to be on an actor's face or on an actor's body, how that collaboration comes to pass. Because Robbie's had it done to him, I've had it done to me, and suddenly you make acting choices completely differently than you would before you put the makeup on, because now the makeup is informing something that you hadn't thought of before, or you haven't experienced or felt before, looking at yourself or seeing how people react to you in this new look. And that's got to be an interesting revelation that you sort of witness and are a part of every time.
Absolutely, man. Yeah, I love being a part of it. It's tricky in TV because there's not a lot of time for development, as you know, right? Like you guys both killed your characters. They're awesome. You're really, really. Thank you for those.
Well, thank you.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, man. And I'm sure you found it too. Like you were around for a while. Did you find it? Did the characters just come out like right away, or was it like? Did it take some time to find it? Because in TV, it's wild. Like I'm always most passionate and most in love with the thing I'm doing now. Right.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. And then often with TV, I've done a lot of episodic work. That with TV, it's you're on to the next by the time you're in shooting now.
I think it's so weird. I mean, I'll quick answer and Rob will answer, but I think that when you're acting, I think it's now that I direct, I see the speed of the process in a different light than I ever did, because it's a freight train.
It's fuckable, right? Yeah.
But when you are, as an actor, you just have to make your choices. I mean, like you are, it's opening night, day one. So like, if finding the character, if you're lucky enough to do more than one episode, which Rob and I were, then you can start to build on what you did first. Mm-hmm. But I kind of feel like your first shot out of the cannon is just like, well, we're going to just go for it and see where it lands. Because you kind of are flying blind, unless you're lucky enough to have Kim Manners direct your first episode, which I didn't, or you have Bob Singer direct your first episode, which I didn't. The guy who directed my first episode, it was also his first episode. So here we are, the blind leading the naked. You know what I mean? Like you just kind of have to lean in and dive head first into it. Robbie, was your experience similar?
Yeah, you just go with whatever your initial instinct was, and you're like, well, I guess they liked what I did in my audition, so I'll just keep doing that. And that was my initial instinct. And like Rich said, we were blessed to be able to do more than just one. And then you get to sort of nuance a little bit. But I remember with my first episode, it was just going on instinct. Instinct and hoping that that's what they wanted, Because again, I didn't work with one of the producers as a director.
Yeah, and it's funny, if you look at TV, if you really get an aerial view of TV, for people who don't work in this industry, it is a gathering of people moving at the speed of light, just clinging to their own skill set and relying on others to do the same. So you're like, I'm going to do my best. and just assume that that department head is, and that department head is, and that guy is, and that gal is, and we're just, we're all moving.
It's a massive trust exercise.
Right, though, it sure is, because you're all just, because there's no time to pump the brakes, man. You're just in.
Yeah, we're on the team. We're in the trenches. Let's get it done. Let's do it.
Yeah.
There's an ED I worked with in one of his, he's the best way to kick off a complicated sequence. He's like, don't be afraid of failure. And, you know, like, just go. I think that's one of the things that really kind of got me in the business too. Like, it's because I started pretty young. I imagine you guys probably did too, eh? Like, and it's like, you know, you're out on a limb, just like, for me, I just, without being in front of camera, but still, like, I'm making art and like, trying to wing it together, and I don't say, yeah, I can do it, and I can do it, but I don't know how I'm going to do it yet, but okay, it'll be done in a week, you know, and always pulling it off. But it's that, fearless kind of confidence, or at least maybe that's the thing that the horror movies, they taught me to suppress my fear enough that I could just move forward.
Yeah, exactly. Circling back to suppressing our fear and plowing forward into the brink.
And just dive off the high dive, you know?
Yeah.
Go for it.
Look, it happened. Yeah. It was awesome.
Well, dude, your imagination is just inspiring. I mean, what you're able to envision and then manifest is amazing. You and your team, and I know it does take a village, but it's
great people.
It's amazing. Yeah. And it's amazing to see on screen.
And we saw it all come to life in this episode. You know, the 1930s film, silent film star, mm-hmm. and fan face.
I like fan face.
Man face, the burn victim lately, lady, the no arm guy at the end, guy with just like, just no arm.
It's a grisly macabre of characters you had in this movie. I mean, I get, you know, it's one thing to go from a werewolf, which is dynamic, but then you have like four just mashed up folks.
Yeah.
Really got the business into the bayonet at some point in their journey. But it's awesome. It's
yeah, you got so much more good stuff coming ahead of you too. It's like, geez, another 14 years along, I guess.
Right.
I don't even want to get into it because I don't want to spoil it for you. But
okay. All right.
Well, we'll have you back in. We'll have you back on the show to talk more.
I'd love to.
And we've just barely scratched the surface, no pun intended, of what your accomplishments and contributions are. So we got to do this again.
Yeah, Toby, Linda, thank you so much.
My pleasure, guys. Thank you.
Hey, this is Jeffrey Dean Morgan. We are going to take a quick break.
Hey everybody, Richard Speight Jr. here, and if you know one thing about this guy, it's that I love boots. I wear them all the time, and that's why I love Tecovas, because they are the real deal. These boots are Austin-designed, Texas-tested, and handmade down in the boot-making capital of the world, León, Mexico. Tecovas are all about style, comfort, and tradition. And they're not just about boots. Tecovas is Western to their core. They offer a bunch of other head-to-toe Western staples, like trucker jackets, the perfect jeans to go with your boots, performance pearl snaps, cowboy hats, bandanas, you name it, they got it, and they will get you outfitted. Tecovas believes in Western for all, and you can feel it when you go into the store. You'll walk in, you're going to be greeted like family, unless you don't like your family, in which case you'll be greeted by people nicer than your family. They'll offer you a boot shine, unless you're wearing sandals, and they'll even hand you a drink. And it'll be the hard stuff if that's what you want. Rob Benedict, I'm looking at you. And right then and there, you can get custom fitted for a brand new pair of boots. You can even get custom leather stamping or branding that'll make those brand new boots truly one of a kind. All you gotta do is stop by Tecovas and get into your new boots today. But Rich, I can't make it into a store. They got you covered. Just visit tecovas.com. That's TECOVAS.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and they ship right to your door. So get on over to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Hey, it's Richard Speight, and I got a question for you. Why are so many dogs suffering with health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the frickin' planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. And hey, all of this sounds fantastic, but the proof is in the pudding. And what I mean is, do the dogs like it? Well, I can speak for my own dog, Luna. She freaking loves it. And that's saying something, because she's no vacuum cleaner, you know. I've seen dogs eat a sofa, but not Luna. Luna is very persnickety, very high maintenance, especially when it comes to what she eats. And Luna went crazy for this food, and I'm loving what it's doing for her. She's got great energy. She looks fantastic, and I'm assuming she feels great. She usually just says, arf, but I'm going to interpret that as, you know what, Rich? Feeling pretty good. So how do you get this fantastic food for your dog? Go to badlands.com/SPNTAN and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsfood.com/SPNTAN today.
Hey, it's Jeffrey D. Morgan again. Welcome back to the podcast.
Well, that was great, man. What a fascinating guy.
Dude, I mean, you got to love these people who are at the top of their game who started as like infants doing it. Like he had a passion for it as a child.
Yeah.
And that passion and that hobby became a groundbreaking career. That's just.
Yeah, I love that. I was like, when did you decide this? He was like, I didn't decide. It just was.
Yeah.
It just was me.
And it sounded like, you know, I'm sure it's, we're laughing now, but he's like, oh, my parents thought I was going to be a, you know,
serial killer.
And yeah. I'm sure that was not a lot of laughter on the dinner table when they were concerned about his, you know,
totally.
His teenage years. But what a incredibly talented person he is.
And yeah.
Obviously a great team leader because he's, you know, got a great group of people doing amazing things. And so long ago, I mean, I again, to reiterate, they were so ahead of their time. The effects look amazing.
Yeah, they still look great.
Yeah, hold up 100%.
Yeah, as does the show.
Yeah, as does your mustache, which I'm still a fan of. I know the jury is out in your personal life, but this guy, we're all in.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, it's time for mythology.
Mythology!
There are a few stories about cursed movie sets.
One is The Exorcist, which is not surprising.
Yeah.
A large fire broke out, destroying most of the sets. Mysteriously, Megan's room was the only one left alone. There were several deaths of people who worked on the film. Actor Jack McGowan and Vasiliki Malarios died while the film was in post-production. Their characters also died in the movie. Creepy.
Whoa, that's creepy.
All right, Robbie.
Also, Rosemary's Baby, equally scary movie. Producer William Castle was hospitalized with kidney stones and was in so much pain, he started hallucinating. While in the hospital, he screamed, "Rosemary, for God's sake, drop the knife." The year after the film came out, composer Christoph Komeda died in a very similar way as a character in the book, falling off a rocky cliff at a party. Roman Polanski's then-girlfriend Sharon Tate got interested in the occult as a result of the movie, and then she was brutally murdered, infamously, by the occult of followers of Charlie Manson. John Lennon even died across the street from where the movie was shot.
That's trippy. The whole Manson murder thing is just so bizarre,
which
I've just read a ton about. And, you know, the fact that he was dating Sharon Tate at the time, and it's crazy.
Yeah.
The Omen. Well, don't get me started, but I guess I should get started. The animal trainer brought in to wrangle the baboons was mauled to death by a tiger the day after shooting.
Well,
he said to his wife when she died years later and joined him at the pearly gates, imagine the irony of getting mauled by a different animal that mauls people. All the time I was worried about the baboons, I sort of turned around to worry about the tiger. Egg on my face. Though they were trained dogs, the two Rottweilers on the set went uncharacteristically wild and injured several people. One of those people would not have been Richard Speight because I wouldn't have been within a stone's throw of two Rottweilers on set. The special effects designer who designed the beheading in the car accident scene was soon after involved in a car accident that beheaded his wife.
Whoa.
Well, that's a hat on a beheaded hat.
Whoa.
That's
whoa.
Awful.
Wow.
That's creepy.
Creepy.
Oh, my God. Dude, The Omen is such a creepy movie. Okay, I'll tell you something about The Omen, but let me finish this trivia. During filming, Gregory Peck and writer David Seltzer were flying on separate private planes, which were both struck by lightning. Good grief. What an awful... My wife had never seen The Omen, And so I showed her that movie the day before our first child was born. It was probably a bad...
Oh, my God, dude.
Yeah. In hindsight, it wasn't a great move. I didn't really think about that when we were like... I was like, oh, we were thinking about names we didn't want. And I said, well, let's not use Damien Thorne as a name, you know? And she's like, well, who's Damien Thorne? I'm like, oh, well, let's watch, you know,
The Omen.
And then, of course, she was like, why would you show me this movie? I'm about to have a child.
That's insane. You know, right after our first child was born, I mean, we were just at home, like, recovering, and we watched, I think it was on Netflix. Remember the documentary about the family that incest and, like, it's called, like, Meet the Somethings.
Yes. It was about, really, it was a documentary that started out to be about clowns at parties, right? And then ended up being a whole family of...
Father and the son that were abusing people.
Well, they were accused of it. Yes, exactly.
Yes, and you never quite know if it's real or not, but by the end of it, you think it probably is. Anyway, we're watching that as we, like, just gave birth, and we're like, why they just... It really messed with our heads. You know, not on this list, but as they mentioned in the episode, is Poltergeist.
Oh, yeah.
Which infamously, three of the actors in that movie died tragic deaths.
Yeah, I know, exactly. The little girl. I mean, heck.
Sam refers to the summoning rituals as being Enochian summoning rituals. Now, everyone knows Enochian is an occult alphabetic system of ceremonial magic that dates back to the 16th century, and it is supposedly a language received directly from the angels. Time to move on to fun facts.
Fun facts! Fun facts! Finally, some effing fun facts!
The title Hollywood Babylon, or as Rich likes to say, Babylon, is taken from the book by Kenneth Anger, which claims to expose several Hollywood celebrities of scandalous things. It is also a song by the Misfits.
If you are just done with Kenneth and you're just tired of him, does that mean you have anger issues?
Sure. The episode is filled with Easter eggs and several self-referential humor about Supernatural, Jared, Jensen, the producers, and crew. Here are just a few. Dean tells Tara he thought she was great in Boogeyman. She tells him it was a horrible script. The 2005 film Boogeyman was written by Eric Kripke and executive produced by Steven Hine, our producer.
Our very own Steve Hine. Some of the notes that the studio executive gives the crew are notes that Supernatural received from the executives from CW.
Yes, I noticed that one, the one about it being too dark.
Yes, I picked that up. I picked up on that one immediately.
The director of the film in the episode is named McGee, after the executive producer of Supernatural, who we've interviewed on this show.
And Billy Beard was the DP that shot Kripke's first short film, Truly Committed, based on the short story by Richard Matheson.
Huh. And a couple others I noticed when they're taking the tour at the beginning, they're like, the Gilmore Girls set is this way.
All right.
And Sam kind of gets a look on his face and, like, exits the shuttle. And as they're walking away, they're like, and Smallville. And he's like, this is the set of Smallville. They talk about Smallville as they're both walking away.
Here's another question. Not a very secure back lot, because they're on the tour in the golf cart and they just hop out.
Hop out.
Like, let's get off here. Like, it's a bus stop.
Yeah. And just walk onto a set.
I did like the whole, what's a PA? I don't know. Like, there are some good bits in there.
And he says, I think they're slaves. I think they're like slaves.
It's a great episode. So fun.
So much
tongue
stuff.
In cheek.
Yeah, you know. It was really, really fun to see. And I'm sure it was fun to watch for fans. It's just such a classic.
Classic. Thank you, everybody, for listening to this episode of the show. Heck, thank you for listening to every episode of the show. It's a treat to have you along for the ride. Robbie?
If we haven't said it lately, we really appreciate you. Thank you.
And you know what?
So
we also appreciate all of you who are joining our Patreon, because we've got one. Supernatural. Has Supernatural Then and Now has its own Patreon, where you get to see extra clips, extra photos, unreleased content. It's awesome. So there's some videos up there. There's a bunch of stuff. So do yourself a solid and join our Patreon, won't you? It's at patreon.com/SPN Then and Now or Supernatural Then and Now. I can't remember.
All right. Thanks, everybody. This episode of Supernatural features Jared Padalecki as Sam Winchester, Jensen Ackles as Dean Winchester.
Guest stars include the great Gary Cole, Don Stark, Regan Burns, Michael B. Silver, Elizabeth Whitmire, Ben Emanuel, and Morgan Brayton.
Hollywood Babylon was written by Ben Edlund and directed by Phil Segrisha.
Edited by Tom McQuaid. Music by Jay Greska.
Supernatural is executive produced by Eric Kripke and Robert Singer.
The episode featured the following songs: I've Got the World on a String by Frank Sinatra, Old Blue Eyes himself, and Green Peppers by Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass.
The episode originally aired on April 19th, 2007.
This episode of Supernatural Then and Now was hosted and executive produced by Richard Speight Jr. and Rob Benedict.
Produced by Stephen Hine. Written by Stephen Hine and Haida Holscher.
Edited and associate produced by Trey Booty.
What up, Booty?
Music provided by Tim Wynn.
The episode was recorded with the help of Sonic Fuel Studios.
This podcast is from Storymill Media.
Follow the podcast on Instagram and Twitter at SPN Then and Now.
And like I said, join our Patreon at patreon.com/SPN Then and Now.
Sam refers to the summoning rituals as being Inakane summoning rituals. Inakane is an occult alphabetic system of ceremonial magic.
I hate to say this, I'm pretty sure it's Enochian.
Okay. After the death of Madison, which we all remember is Rich.
You don't remember Jack Crap.
I do. She was the werewolf.
She was the werewolf that you coveted who made sweet love to Jared and you were jealous.
Yes.
You know, the other thing that's funny about that is it just goes to show the entire lie of this podcast just crumbled around your feet. As you, the erudite Northwestern grad who does our summaries, who reads our summary. I'm just a color guy. You read them like Alistair, you know, Cook doing Masterpiece Theater.
A lot of people say you remind me of a young Alistair Cook.
All the time. And you say, and you sit here and you read it with your highbrow Midwest accent. Yeah. And as soon as like you sentence one after the death, beginning of sentence one after the death of Madison. Uh-huh. And who's Madison? No clue.
I was like, I thought Madison maybe was like the person who, I don't know. I'm reading this for the first time, Richard. That's what people don't realize. I've just got these sides handed to me.
I know, but it just shows a little, peeking behind the curtain. Now I'm beginning to see, like the audience is as well, this is a house built on lies.
We record out of order. And so I
had you're to, out like, of order.
Sort of refocus. Okay.
What's the actor's name again?
Cut out this pause if you could.
No, never. Just add the sign of traffic going by.
Storymill Media.